I have it.
That boy like Madea. Let go, Madea.
Tonga by Lord. Blocked by Armstead. Two into the end zone. Caught for the touchdown! Caught for the touchdown! Waddle! Miami has taken the lead!
Jack, what the f***?
It's your two favorite degenerates back with another Day One Dolphins podcast, once again hosted by your boy Ouch. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. Here with me, back, returned from the hiatus coaching, my fellow lifelong Miami Dolphins fan, Chief Sut. Please throw him a follow on Twitter at Chief Sut, aka Coach Sut. Follow our podcast Twitter at Day, the number one Dolphins. Stay up to date. Let's get down to it. What's going on, Sut?
I'm 4-1, dog. Think this
four
is the it's what
which the league? First,
no, we're 4-1 in real life.
Okay.
The NFL league, dog, the National Football League. I believe it's the first time since 2000 or something like that.
2003, I believe.
Yeah. So what? Yeah, that was a Sammy Morris and Ricky.
I think. The first Ricky.
The first song of Ricky.
Yeah. You know, before, you know, we had another one. It wasn't the same as that one. But yeah, that was the Lightning one. That was 2003. They went 10-6. It was Dave. It was Mustache Dave, dog. That's
Dave
why.
Dave wants that, man. The OG.
Yeah, I mean,
he was quarterback away from just greatness.
Oh, man. I'm looking at like. Oh man, the Pro Bowlers from that year: Zach Thomas, Patrick Surtain,
Sam Addison. Did you say Jason Taylor?
No, neither one of them made it somehow.
What?
Jason Taylor might have been hurt.
Nah, I demand a recount. However, they got to do it.
Yeah, right. What a time that was! Like
Marty Booker,
Chris Chambers.
I would say Marty Booker was like 05. We definitely had Randy McMichael though.
Yeah, Aronde Gadsden.
Man, Cody Reed's going to be fired up about the Aronde Gadsden drop.
Nah, Jason Taylor was on. He wasn't hurt, I don't think.
Was it just a down year?
Yeah, maybe.
I felt like he was
maybe overlooking. Maybe overlooking. So,
I don't know.
RIP Junior Seau was out there too. So,
RIP the big homie. He came up in conversation the other day. This pair of girls pulled up on me in Dolphins gear. I was like, yo, nice. And one of them was rocking the 5-5. I'm like, oh, wow. The Junior
like
Seau, RIP. And she goes, no. We can't wear that outside. RIP. This is Joey Porter. I'm like, okay.
Oh, my goodness.
They had a Joey Porter and a Zach Thomas. And I'm like, okay. I see you, ladies. We're doing it out here.
Yeah, that's the real deal. I respect them. Hopefully they saw this Giants game that we got to witness.
Oh, they loved it. So did the guy
today,
in the Clayton.
Today I figured we would just go through the position groups, choose one player from each position group that you noticed. You know what I'm saying? We just got done watching some of the all 22 together, but even if you're just in the, you know, the first viewing of the game, you know, somebody that stood out, because a lot of guys bounced back in this game. In the preview episode, I had talked about how I expected, you know, the combination of us being matched against a pretty poor team with all the criticism that some of our players have been getting for underperforming was just like the perfect storm for a get back game. And that's kind of what happened. We'll start with the QB room, obviously. I'll go ahead and make this one easy. I think we both agree that our favorite play for Tua for the day was one where we're backed up in our own end zone. It's looking like it's going to get a safety. Offensive line breaks down a little bit on the outside. He climbs up into the pocket, right into the hole. No pressure. Keeps it cool. Delivers a short little ball to, I think, Jalen Waddle.
Tyreek Hill came off.
Yep. For a large gain, too, and you know, which would look like it could have been a safety, and that was cold, man. That was pretty good. So that was our favorite play there. And two interceptions. One's a pick six. Was a terrible decision.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said something on Twitter and in the chat that I think Tua is just so used to being able to make these pinpoint accurate throws in traffic that most quarterbacks don't even attempt.
Right.
That he kind of relies on his own confidence level. And I can't really knock him for that. You know, he makes it happen all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to have to eat this one. Somebody on Twitter posted that there was 38 touchdowns or something in between his last red zone interception and now, and zero interceptions. So if we get 38 touchdowns, zero interceptions in the red zone in between every pick six or pick that he has in the red zone, I think we'll be just fine.
Yeah. You can consider that uncharacteristic of him. One, he was driving. So what makes it really suck is that it was right before the half, and we know we can't throw red zone interceptions. We know we can't throw pick sixes, and we know we definitely can't do it right before the half, but it's Tua. That's uncharacteristic. It wasn't the end of the world. He still drove down, and I believe they kicked the field goal after that, and obviously he came back out in the second half and started slinging some more. But
it's funny that we have the stats to prove that it was uncharacteristic, but while you're watching the broadcast, Jonathan Vilma, I'll refrain from cursing so that we don't have to put any extra edit effort in for this one. But you could imagine what I'd have to say about Jonathan Vilma. Let's just call him a loser.
Yeah.
You know, he played for the Jets. You know, so he knows what being a loser is like. He is a loser on and off the field, it seems. Tired of listening to him talk. But yeah, he said it was, Tua usually makes mistakes in the red zone. I'm like, what am I even listening to right now? So these guys don't even watch games. It's crazy.
And he's not prepared. Because if you want to say that, it's a quick Google search, Tua red zone percentages. They probably have somebody on a headset that he can just ask.
But the broadcast was a mess, bro.
Was it that
everything?
Bad? I was playing for the record, so I was watching it. It was pretty cool. I was watching on like a 40-inch screen or a 40-foot screen, like,
bro, they
right
had,
in front of me. But
they were calling Daniel Jones Tua. They were naming offensive players as defensive players. They put the incorrect score on the board. They had the wrong down and distance. They were just like allowing Jonathan Vilma to say the dumbest things in between like breaks. And it was just, you could just hear the bias. It's so annoying that they even put these guys like, take the guys off that are obviously biased. I don't want to hear it. I want to hear people that are excited for both teams.
You know who we want. We want Kevin Harlan. And that's
and he'll
it.
Be there next week.
That's all I care about. As long as we got the big homie on some big plays, dude. He fires
next week,
me up.
And you know it's going to be a good one. I'll be listening.
Oh, yeah, dude.
But moving on, let's go offensive line. Who stood out for you offensive line, would you say, and why?
I mean, just watching that little bit of film that we saw, and not naming somebody that I always name, I gotta shout out my boy Austin Jackson out here, bro.
Ooh-wee.
I know we drafted him really young, and he was always going to be like a prospect that we had to develop, but he proved back in, you know, his USC days that he's very talented for his size. He can move. He's got hands. And for lining up against some of these defensive linemen, you need somebody like that. He just needed a second to get right and the right coach to get to him. But it looks like the coaching's working. This guy's shooting off the line in run plays. He's getting downfield. He's pancaking people. He's holding his own in the pass game. I believe he hasn't given up a pressure in like 3 or 4 games or something like that. Like, he's showing up and showing out, brother. So I have to give it to him, dude. I like it.
Yeah, and I mean, this is just for reference here. This is a guy that we spent a lot of time, especially me, being real critical of his game, and for good reason too. You know, I don't want to act like I was just completely wrong. This is a dream come true to see this happen, you know, but he was also always the athletic one. But Austin Jackson in pass protection versus the Giants, 32 snaps played, 0 sacks allowed, 0 hits allowed, 0 hurries allowed, just absolute gem of a game from Austin Jackson. Another guy that I would say who I would choose for my guy is going to be Isaiah Wynn, man.
Oh,
Isaiah
yeah.
Wynn was, I mean, Rob Hunt special, you know, we always talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
I would hate to not say his name, but we're not going to go through everybody today. It was great to see Connor Williams at center back. That made a huge difference. But Isaiah Wynn, that play, the end around from our own end zone on first down, where Mike McDaniel dials up the same end around we've been seeing happen, and yep. Devon Achan just takes it all the way to the house for, what, 78 yards. If you go back and watch that a bunch of times, look at the left guard. Look at Isaiah Wynn. Turn his body completely horizontally and put this block in place that creates this like 5-foot lane that you could probably drive a car through. That's how large of a hole between him and Durham Smythe pushing, you know, each other, pushing their guys to create the width of the hole. It was crazy. And then it's nice to have a running back that just knew that and took it to the house, man. Same play, Austin Jackson, you know, went above and beyond. We don't know for sure if he needed to go that far downfield to make a block, but he's fast enough and long enough, and he did it. But those two guys had a hell of a day. Tight end room, we really only have one guy to talk about, Durham Smythe. We did see Julian Hill, like, last game and the game before making a bunch of blocks, but this time I would say Durham Smythe. I think you'd probably agree with me on that.
I mean, do I, like, if do they pay me every time I talk about Durham Smythe? I wouldn't have to DJ that much.
Like, you're lucky that you missed out on the last show, because that was the worst game that he had ever played, for sure.
Oh, I listened. But, yeah, I know. He's again, he's solid enough. As long as we don't ask too much, he can do it. And we're not seeing enough Julian Hill consistently to really start, you know, throwing him out there, but there's definitely been flashes, at least, you know, of some depth if we really needed it.
Especially blocking. He's putting hands on people. I'm also hoping that we're seeing a little bit of rumors about, you know, Chase Claypool maybe being converted to tight end. So it's worth looking at, you know, we'll see what happens.
Don't tell Colby, dude.
If anybody's going to do it, it's going to be, what's his name? Our tight ends coach.
Embry.
Yeah, John Embry.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. Let's see. What else? Wide receiver room. You could go with anybody, so you really can't lose. What do you think?
Well, even though there was a Cedric Wilson sighting, I don't need to harp on that too much. I know there's a couple of people out there that really don't want him on our team for some reason. But I got to give it to the Penguin. His first game back, just the energy he brings and how excited he is on every play. And again, we watched some of the film and he is blocking so hard. Stock blocking for Tyreek, blocking downfield for the running backs. Like, he's bringing it even if he's not getting the ball. And that is elite wide receiver stuff. That's how you stay on the field. That's how it makes it unpredictable for a defensive coordinator to know what's going to happen. Because most guys don't really block like that. And the way they take off, they have tells that this is about to be a pass where they're going to get the ball, or something that they're going backside, or if it's just a regular old run. You don't have that with Jalen or Tyreek, to be honest. We talk about Tyreek all the time, but shouting out the Penguin on his first game back, dude. I can watch him block. I can watch him take off. He's amazing. He's a complete receiver. It's fantastic. And he's like 170 pounds. But
yeah, I love all of our receivers blocking, to be honest. Nobody, maybe Robbie Chosen Anderson, whatever it is. He's the one that needs a little bit of work. Everybody else is pretty great at blocking, all of them, especially River Craycraft. But if I had to choose somebody for this game, I did love Waddle. Waddle got targeted the most, and I figured it would be a get back game for him. He didn't obviously get all the completions that he was targeted with. But it could have been a very big get back game for Waddle, and I expect to see another one soon. I'm just going to take the easy one and go with Tyreek here, just because he shows his entire film is littered with just textbook blocking, you know, and every time he touches the ball, the improvising, burning the guy on that 60 something yard touchdown, just everything is advertised. I would live and die talking about Tyreek Hill every single week and have no problem doing it. What would be the next room here for offense? We covered everything, right? Running back room. Sorry. Names to really go for.
And I only want to talk about one.
Go ahead. Let it rip.
You know what? I'm going to say it. I don't care who gets mad about it. I'm pretty sure the A-train's faster than Tyreek Hill.
I disagree, but
you can. We'll see. You can. And A-Train feels the same way that I do. He's brought up their track stats and records and wins and all that other stuff. And he's at the point now where he's openly saying it too. And I would like to
quote
him.
They're trolling each other.
Hey, I'd like to quote him. Yeah. Yeah. Tyreek ran 22, but he still got hawked though. So I haven't seen A-Train get hawked like that. Every time I see him touch the ball, he pretty much scores. So he's amazing. Obviously, we knew coming out that he was fast, and like there was talks in camp about how fast he was, but the way it's translating and the way that he just doesn't dance at all. The only comparison I can think of for him is Chris Johnson. You remember CJ2K for the Titans?
Oh yeah.
That's the only player that I can think of that literally he just one foot in the ground takes off, and he's just so fast that you don't have a chance unless you're playing really far back and you take a fantastic angle and you think you have a fantastic angle, and then he gets there and you don't even touch him.
And it's, you know, you're seeing it looks very, very similar to how we watch this constant Deebo Samuel breakaway for a touchdown because of all the great blocks downfield by the receivers and by the linemen that are athletic to do mm-hmm. it, you know. And I'm not taking anything away from him because you need somebody that can capitalize on it, but it seems that we also have both. And I'll go ahead and mention Raheem. I mean, he ain't been no slouch either, you know what I mean? Like, he's getting some of the dirtier yards when the game's still unpredictable before the Devon Achan breakaway runs and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still getting some dirty, like, after contact. I think he hit somebody in the hole this game, man. Isaiah Simmons. Leveled Isaiah Simmons at the sticks. Like, he's still fast, obviously, but we're seeing a different Raheem.
He's a power back, bro. He's proven that he's a power back, not a speed back.
And he wants to, and he's taking pride in it, and I love it, especially with Jeff Wilson not back yet. Like, he's lowering his shoulder. He needs to hang on to the ball here, but
Both of them apparently need to hang on to the ball here. And we're talking about Raheem's not doing too bad. Raheem averaged 6.5 yards per carry last game. And for anybody that's, you know, maybe not an advanced football knowledge person, anything, in my opinion, over 4 to 4.5 yards per carry, that's like bare minimum to be solid. And if you're averaging 5 a carry and up,
you're a top back in the league.
You're balling. So he averaged 6.5 on 10 carries, which that's a good amount. A-Train averaged 13.7 with one more carry. Like,
yeah, less touches.
This is amazing. We talked about running the dunking hall. Like,
they're contributing highly to each other's success. Also, I think so it's just really a perfect storm, man. It's all of it.
Once
one thing breaks open, everything else gets harder to stop, and we got the right guys for it. But to the defense, we will say a little bit different. You know, not as high on the defense, obviously, coming into this game as we are the offense. But let's start with the D line. I touched, obviously, in the last episode a lot about how they've been underperforming, perfect storm, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And we saw a lot of that. We saw them take advantage of this. A lot of guys started inflating those stats, kind of missed Jalen Phillips. He could have used some of those numbers for the end of the year, you know. But Christian Wilkins came alive. I'm going to go, man, you know, I'm going to go ahead and go with Bradley Chubb here just to play devil's advocate. So that's going to be my choice.
I like that. Second highest graded player by PFF on the game. So
okay. So we got, not only did Bradley Chubb show up as a second highest rated PFF player, which means almost nothing to me because I hate PFF, but I think he led the game in pressures. Kyle Krabs put out a statistic on his initial Victory Monday episode about how per snap, Bradley Chubb averages to be the closest to the quarterback pressure and leads the team in it. And you just saw that anytime, if you go and watch the film, I'd say half the time that a sack or, you know, a QB hit occurs, if it's not Bradley Chubb putting hands on the QB, it's him being the first person to pressure behind the line of scrimmage that ultimately ends up in someone else sacking the quarterback.
Right.
And those are things that matter and don't show up as easily when you're just looking for sacks. And he makes a big impact, and he had a huge game this game. Who you got?
He was heavily involved. I'll give it to him. I am critical of Bradley Chubb, but we got 7 sacks, and he was pretty involved and pretty near the ball on basically all of them. So
you got the PFF pulled up. Actually, how many pressures did they credit him with this? How many QB hits and pressures did they give him?
So he had 4 hurries, 1 hit, 1 sack, 6 total tackles, 2 assists.
No pressures? It doesn't log?
It has hurries, which I'm pretty sure it's like the same thing.
Gotcha.
Yeah, that'd be 4.
Pretty good day.
Yeah, very good day. But are we doing, you want linebackers or just overall?
No, just pass rushers for right now.
Oh, my favorite, Andrew Van Ginkle. He's the best pass rusher on the team, and he's the lowest paid. You want to talk about a high effort guy that's just going to bring it no matter what. And from the film that we've watched, he holds containment so fundamentally sound. He's very rarely over pursuing and finding himself really far away from the ball and giving up a wide cutback lane that he doesn't have the ability to make a play on. He's shutting stuff down wide and keeping control of the blocker and dictating where this play is going to go versus over pursuing or getting chopped or any just small thing that traditionally happens to pass rushers or what you try to do to them. You want to get them to try to fly inside a little bit. That way you can break outside and get them to lose containment. And he just won't allow it. Even on jet sweeps coming his way, he's running all the way out to the sideline, arms fully extended, not letting himself get blocked. And the help's on the way, and he almost makes a tackle himself anyway. Like, he's an absolute stud, bro. We have to just keep starting him.
My favorite thing to bring up about him
yeah,
is that he grew up in Rock Valley, Iowa. Population last year, 4,096.
4,000 people from his hometown.
There are no minorities out there all either. Zero. Not zero, but very close to zero. The percentage is staggering.
He got it out the mud.
Yeah, he really did. And the irony is that they call that small little crummy town the city of opportunity, the place of opportunities.
Oh, well, yeah. he's proven it.
Yeah, he has.
So does it also, before we move on from him, doesn't it feel like he always bats at least one pass down when he starts?
He's just got a full bag of everything. Like, he's going to give you one of everything in his skill set. You know what I mean? And I feel like we got a couple guys like that. Love everybody that tries to punch the ball out every single play. Love the guys that try to bat down every single pass when they realize it's about to get off before they can get the pressure. You know, love guys that chase the ball down. Even
every
if you're
play.
On the other side of the field, you're going toward the ball, hustling towards the ball every time. Maybe the Brian Flores era, you know, really did craft some of these guys and, you know, help them elevate their game, and maybe not. But Andrew Van Ginkle is one of those guys I'm very, very happy that has stuck around, and I don't see them letting him go after this season.
You can't. You just started him, and this game he led the team in total tackles. He had a sack. He had quarterback hit. He had 7 hurries compared to Chubb's 4, Wilkins 5. 3 from Raekwon Davis. Nice. 1 batted ball. Like, he is just awesome. And we've seen him drop into coverage. I can't speak highly enough of him, but we can move on. You want to go DBs? You want to go D-line? What are you thinking?
I mean, there really ain't much to talk about for the other linebackers. You know, both of them play a very up and a very down game. You know, a lot of communication has to happen between those two. And out of everyone on the field, I do feel like that group is what's struggling the most right now to catch up with the scheme here. Their responsibilities, you have multiple things they got to worry about, and they're just a little hesitant. You know, we saw on the film the David Long miscommunication where, you know, Cater and Deshaun Elliott are trying to yell at him what he needs to change and do. And then the very last second he tries to listen to them. It's too late. Now he's a step out of place and there's a completion. You know, it's very reminiscent of the Alandon Roberts experience. You know, when he's there, he's banging on you. And when he's not, it's usually his fault. So hopefully they get that cleaned up. But we can avoid talking about the linebackers altogether because of that. Move right on to the DBs. Who do you got for the DB that you notice the most here? Let's go ahead and make it corners and safeties. You have fully DB here.
I'm going to go with somebody that you were giving a hard time to because he made one comment that you just didn't like that, you know, wasn't that far off base. And Deshaun Elliott. That guy matters a lot for our defense. Don't sure ask does. Me why. I don't know if he's just more comfortable with it, if he's played in it before, played in something similar. He's very open to communicating, and it seems like he's very good at it. And if there is a miscommunication on a play, he's immediately going up to the player and squaring it up real quick, getting it out the way. Hey, all good. Let's move on and get it right. And he's always around the ball, just as much as Javon. It's excellent. It's beautiful, but we also saw how bad it sucks when he doesn't play and how much of a drop off there is. And that could be because of his communicating or just his overall play. Hard to tell, but that's exactly kind of what you said on the last episode about Brandon Jones. Is it that Brandon Jones is playing this terribly or is Deshaun Elliott playing this well? And it seems like Deshaun Elliott's playing this well.
Yeah, especially when it comes to, like we just talked about, having to recognize the play. You know, we really relied on Javon Holland for a lot of that. Alandon Roberts was pretty good at it too, to be honest. But now you're seeing Deshaun Elliott kind of be one of those guys, the guy who's just like, look, this is what's happening. You know, this is a run play, move to the right. You know, and he's very decisive about it, and we need that. We saw the switching off. You know, who was the one that drops further back into coverage? It wasn't all Javon in the box. They had him come up close too. So it's nice to see that they are more interchangeable than Brandon Jones and Javon. You know, when it's both of them out there, you kind of want Javon to be the one that has to play safer. And then you don't get to see him make the big splash plays down closer to the line of scrimmage that you get to when you have somebody you can trust. So huge impact player. And yeah, I don't think anyone liked him when he came to the team talking about that Lamar Jackson stuff, but we're far removed from that now after watching him play on the field. And what a great acquisition as well. Like, dude, Chris Greer again, making magic with just very subtle moves.
And he's a guy that he played the same amount of snaps as Xavier Howard, which was 72. And the only people that played more plays than those two played 73 snaps. So Deshaun Elliott and X got a playoff that Jerome Baker, Javon Holland, and Cater didn't get. But he's in that company 5 games into the season where he's already a guy that basically doesn't come off the field. He came off the field one play on defense. David Long played 67. Yeah, Eli Apple got 66 while Van Ginkle's getting 60 and Bradley Chubb's getting 57. So
see, now that brings me to my DB. I was going to go with Eli Apple. I do want to stop and appreciate Javon Holland, especially that play.
Oh, yeah.
Deep where he literally is running full speed, you know, from yards away, but times it perfectly so that when he jumps and his hand goes in the air and he swats it down, all he really touched was the ball. He barely touched the receiver at all. He just flew in front of him and smacked the ball down, and it was a thing of beauty. And he played well outside of that, too, but we talk about him all the time. I want to talk about Eli Apple. That's going to be my DB because, you know, What a great game from Eli Apple, I thought, in general. You know, he had one where, you know, Darren Waller got the best of him, kind of big boyed him. And shout out Xavier Howard, special mention too, because he was the only one that didn't get big boyed by Darren Waller. And I loved seeing that. But yeah, man, Eli Apple making a contribution to this DB room here. Holding his own outside of there. I mean, it ain't Stephon Diggs, but it was a big difference than seeing Cater outside. So,
well, dog,
love seeing that.
We talked about it a couple episodes ago when he got really beat up on, and it's a simple formula. He's the person on the defense that you're going to target. As young as Cater is, he's pretty
savvy. So you don't really want to target him if you can help it. And obviously you do not want to throw around Xavien Howard unless you just catch him slipping. So by default, Eli Apple's going to get more attention than most. And he was the most targeted this last game. And 8 targets compared to 6 for X, 5 for Cater, 3-2, little things here.
Let's hear those PFFs for the DBs. So are we on point with what we what I thought here? Is Eli up there? I hope to God he is.
Yes, he is. So Cater, do you want to go by coverage or just overall?
Just go by overall. I mean,
okay. So Cater's the first ranked, followed by Holland, Deshaun, and Eli.
Just there like we go. And I did want to say Cater had a bounce back too, but he wasn't, there wasn't as much responsibility on his plate as last game. That, let's just say that. Mm-hmm. And, but special mention there, dude, if you're running a screen pass and Cater Kohu is pressed up to the line of scrimmage, count your blessings, dog. Because he knows it's coming.
Check out of that.
Call audible.
Get something else. You don't want to do that. I'm telling you, bro.
Audible right now because he knows. He knows every time, man.
Yep.
But
that was a major bounce back game. But him and Javon are guys that we talk about every week. This is cool that we got to talk about Eli Apple and Deshaun Elliott, two guys that were new to the team that are making plays.
And just, you know, overall, the Vic Fangio philosophy really coming closer together here. We still really need to shore up some problems. We still, I'd say that the run defense was much better. Obviously, you know, the Giants line is banged up. We got Matt Breida back there. It's not Saquon, so say what you will. But maybe you need a little bit of confidence, you know. In the next game, it's probably going to be a little bit better, you know. They have Miles Sanders over there, better, healthier Chuba. Offensive line. Yeah, Chuba Hubbard,
better so quarterback.
a little bit of a test here, you know. But for what it was, it looked great. The run defense looked much improved. Pass defense wasn't terrible. Definitely need to shore up some things. Some things responsibility wise, getting passed off or not passed off when they're supposed to. But over time, like I talked about last episode, this should get better week to week, man. And to see players like Eli Apple and Deshaun Elliott be the bigger contributors to a good game, that is a recipe for success.
Absolutely, bro. It's gonna come together. And I was listening to the episode like, wow, he really is being the optimistic one here. This is kind of nice. And what he's saying is kind of how I feel. Like, it can only get better with how competitive and I guess just dog-ish everyone on our defense is. All of them want to put up big numbers and excel and lead the league in statistical categories, and they want to have home playoff games and go on a real run. So you put all that together. I think Fangio just needs to adjust to almost the new style of NFL where if you're coaching closer to the McDaniel way than the old school way, you might get a little bit more out of the players. And the players are like, they're getting the system down, but they'll get it down more if they're really connecting with them, you know? So it could be that. I could be tripping. Fangio could be like the coolest dude ever, and they're all just loving it. But I can tell whatever he's calling over there is mad complicated, and it requires a lot of want to on top of a lot of studying and a lot of just extra work outside of practice in order to really get it. But the offense did all that, and it looks good. So
it took them a year. You know, we talk about the offensive line and how much better it looks. That was a little bit more of an elaborate ask of Mike McDaniel, and he knew that he couldn't get away with it last year. You know, you can see how now how bad he wants to run the ball, how great he is at drawing this stuff up, how exciting it is, and how, like, you know, the blocking schemes look like totally different things than what we've seen so far. And I think Fangio has a lot of elaborate stuff he'd like to throw in, out on the plate too, you know, some exotic looks, and they're just not ready for it yet. Unfortunately, you know, this takes a while. So for the millionth time, I hope towards the end of the year, we'll see a better product, maybe a closer product to what we would see next year after an entire 2 off seasons of learning the scheme. But
my brother in Christ, when Jalen Ramsey gets back, we're going to see some stuff. I just got a feeling.
Yeah. I think so too. And I think that he's probably one of the most familiar, and I think he's got a lot of time on his hands to do homework right now too. So, but, the score of the game yesterday, 16-31, right? Yeah. And preseason, I think you had it as 17-35. So pretty close, man. Not bad.
We're going to hit one of these soon. I think honestly, your score prediction for next week might hit. Mine 28-21. Yeah, 17-38. I think, I mean, we're on pace for that, you know? That's what it's been looking like. But could get a little trappy out there. We'll see.
But we'll see, and we'll be back to talk about the Panthers preview. It will either be me or Sud, or maybe both, and we don't know yet. So follow the podcast Twitter at Day One Dolphins. Follow Chief Sud at Chief Sud. Follow me on Twitter at YFinsYY. And until next time, fins up and Sud.
Yes, for the win at the crib.
Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the Miami Dolphins. Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Yes, we're the Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins, Miami Dolphins number one. Miami has the Dolphins, the greatest football team. We take the ball from goal to goal like no one's ever seen. We're in the air, we're on the ground, we're always in control. And when you say Miami, you're talking Super Bowl, cause we're the